BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
Dum. Sound checking. I'm sound checking.
Joe.
It's a stupid sound check.
Yeah, I don't know about this one, man.
Yeah, is it no good?
I don't know. It lacks melody.
It does lack a little bit of melody.
But you know
it?
What? It's Glastonbury-centric.
That's
the key thing. So in a way, it's brilliant. And hello, listeners. Welcome to our second podcast here from the Glastonbury Festival. We found some friends. Hey, guys. There's only one of them, but he's got a very loud voice.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's got a chorus effect on his voice.
Yeah, incredible.
And, look, someone's brought Boggins.
Oh, no, it's the stinky... Listen, this is a good opportunity while Boggins is here to finally figure out whether we should kill him or not. Wait. So, listen, Black Squadron are around us, and they now have the incredible task of deciding the fate of Boggins. So if you wish Boggins to die, please shout the word die now.
Die!
Oh, bruv, that's not very good news, bruv.
Boggins, I'm not sure what Boggins is saying.
I love you, I just want to buy your legs. Why? I done a poo.
Nothing. Not sure what he thinks about that. If you want Boggins to live, shout live now.
Live! Oh, thanks, bruv. Love you.
And
I'm
so
just
Boggins will live another day.
Done a massive poo. I'll see you tomorrow. I love you. Bye.
Off Boggins trots. He's having a lovely time in the mud. It's his natural environment.
Yeah. And he's leaving little presents in the mud for people to...
He's making the mud a little bit more fragrant and
discover.
Sticky.
Yeah. Now, we had a wonderful, enjoyable time with the squadron today. They came and met us at the beginning of the show. You'll be hearing that in this podcast. And there was the usual rambly nonsense as well later on. So I guess we could just get on with it, couldn't we?
Why don't you just get on with it?
Why don't you just get on with it?
I said it first.
Yeah, but I'm turning it back in your face.
Here's the podcast.
Here's the podcast.
This is the voice of the big British castle, coming live from the Glastonbury Festival. Your hosts tonight are Dr. Buckley's and Corny Corns, but for paperwork they're known as Adam and Joe, just so you know.
This is Adam and Joe here at Glastonbury live. We're standing right by the pyramid stage in the mud and the slurry. It's very exciting. And how are you doing, Joe?
I'm doing very well. Something strange has happened, listeners.
What's happened?
Well, we sent out a call on last week's show for any listeners who were here at Glastonbury to join us outside the left gate, outside the pyramid stage at 10 a.m. We are now outside the left gate at the pyramid stage at 10 a.m. And lo and behold, there's 60 million Black Squadron members.
Hey! Okay, that's the sound of the squadron.
Now, that's real. I mean, that's not just a sound effect we loaded up. Sorry, my stomach's having a few problems. Had a kebab.
The problem is, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you right now that we're right by the pyramid stage, and that sound, the strange sound you can hear there, is David Bowie's spaceship landing. He's just come down to Earth. He's been talking to some tall Venusians. And he's now joined us in the mud. We've asked him to keep it down. Obviously, it's a little disruptive. But the pyramid stage sound guys are on board. I had a little fight with one of them yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah, a little ruck. I pushed him in the mud.
Did you?
We were rolling around a little bit. I teased him and he teased me back.
I'm going to be disappointed if this is a lie.
It is a little bit of a lie.
I'm disappointed.
Sorry, mate.
Hello, Black Squadron, again. Hello.
Hello!
Thank you very much, everybody, for turning out.
Yeah,
some of you have even printed out your Taffin masks. We put some pictures of Pierce Brosnan on the blog, and some people have cut them out and are wearing them. Should we talk to this? Why don't we take this gentleman's coming forward? Ooh, hello, sir. What's your name?
My name's Ian.
Ian, and you're holding your Taffin mask. You're not wearing it. Why?
Yeah, it was all a bit of a last-minute rush on Tuesday evening. Print it off at work, take it home, cut it out.
How would you feel if, as punishment, the rest of the Black Squadron tore you to shreds?
Maybe a little harsh, but understandable.
Well, you know what Black Squadron's like. It is harsh. We're tough. It's tougher than the SAS.
Well, but we should stand the squadron to attention with the jingle, shouldn't we? Black
Squadron! Oh, it's catch the beginning of the show. Black Squadron don't want them slipping. That's not the way Black Squadron roll. Black Squadron! Went to bed at a reasonable hour. Gotta be sharp on Saturday morning. That's the secret of the squadron's power.
Black Squadron!
There you go, live Black Squadroning here. The squadron is standing to attention. They are fully erect and looking very good. Not too muddy at all, actually, considering we are in an absolute mud slurry deluge situation after a day of heavy rain yesterday here at the festival. But they're looking good, and a few tap-in masks here. David, is there any way you could turn off your spaceship just for this?
This is the most sinister of all tap-in masks.
What's your name, sir?
Pete.
Hey, Pete. Describe, Joe, what Pete has done with his mask.
Well, he's sort of cut the eyes out in a terrifying Sackboy way, as if he'd actually ripped the flesh off Pierce Brosnan's face.
It looks exactly like the bit in Silence of the Lambs where Anthony Hopkins stuffs up a security guard, then removes his face as a disguise.
Say, put the lotion in the basket.
Put the lotion in the basket.
Put the lotion in the basket!
Very good.
Oh, wait, was she a great big fat person?
We're coming live from Glastonbury. We are extremely glad. The atmosphere's amazing, but the smell is very bad in the festive hall.
Yesterday, here at Glastonbury, a rumour went round that Radiohead would be playing on the park stage as the big surprise guests, and it turned out to be untrue.
Oh, that's a shame.
Scooch came out, and they were amazing. They played a blinding set.
But apparently people were angry that Scooch is, you know, Scooch were on such a small stage that some people couldn't hear their hits.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it took ages to get to the Scooch field, and there was a little revolution. And what happened in the end was that the crowd got so out of control that Radiohead decided they would play.
Right.
After all. Coral is over here. She's a squadron member. How are you doing, Coral?
I'm very good. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good. You've painted your face beautiful like a, like a fairy.
Thank you. It's all glittery.
How long, when did you paint your face?
This morning. It's actually my friend did it. It took her about 40 minutes.
She did a great job. Now, Coral, you went over to see Radiohead yesterday over at the park stage, and we were sat in the BBC compound before that kicked off at 8 o'clock, and there were urgent messages coming through on the radio saying, they're shutting down the park stage, there's too many people, it's out of control, it's getting dangerous. How was it in reality?
Well, I actually got there 4 hours early, so I was at the front. I mean, I watched previously, I think they were Warpaint and then Bad. So as I was there, just more and more people kept arriving. My friends were on their way, and I phoned them to say, you're not going to get in. And it was just insane. I mean, I'm quite short, so I couldn't see behind me. But when I looked, it just went on forever, and there was people stood up on the hill, the Stone Circle, trying to watch. It was quite insane.
And what was the reaction when, because presumably by that time, most people knew that it was Radiohead that were going to pop out. But how did the crowd respond when Tom came out, and what did he start playing? What was their first number?
They went wild. I think he played Lotus Flower first. He came out and, you know, started dancing. Yeah, everyone just went mental, basically.
And was it smiley Tom we got yesterday, or slightly taciturn Tom, grumpy Tom? Like, Morrissey was a little bit grumpy, I noticed, maybe because he was unhappy about being up against Radiohead. But was Tom on good form?
Yeah, I've only ever seen smiley Tom when I've seen Radiohead. So, yeah, he was on great form. He was dancing around, you know, he was making little jokes. It was really good.
Because one of the last times that Radiohead were here, I think, at Glastonbury, was the one of their massive gigs where they had all kinds of technical problems, didn't they, which really freaked them out playing live for a long time. So I guess it must have been a sort of nice triumphant return for them, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, they really enjoyed it. They came out for an encore at the end and everything. They seemed really thrilled with the response and everyone there and how it turned out.
Excellent. Hey, thanks a lot, Coral. Nice to talk to you, and I love your face.
Thank you.
Glastonbury, 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 Glastonbury. Adam and Joe and Six Music, Jan and playing new music from Glastonbury, 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 Glastonbury.
Now, this is Adam and Joe here live at Glastonbury, and we are with Black Squadron, the elite listening force that listened to the show live for the first half hour.
What
and
was that, Squadron?
Stephen!
Stephen!
Glastonbury!
They're on point this morning.
That's proper. So before we take our leave of the squadron and go back to our porter cabin, we have some Taffin business that we need to deal with, don't we, guys? So who has now seen the film Taffin and enjoyed it thoroughly?
Yes. Yay!
Yeah, of course. Sort of eight people.
eight slightly insane people. But what we're going to do is recreate for you that pivotal scene right now. So are you going to be Bronholm?
No, I'm not going to be Bronholm.
Okay, I'm going to be Bronholm. And
yes, this is perfect Taffin music. This is the music Taffin likes to make love to.
Rob is here, he's a squadron member, and he's going to be the lady in the Taffin scene. Hey, Rob, how are you doing?
I'm very well indeed, thank you.
And you know your lines?
I know some of them, yes.
Squadron, are you ready? Yeah! Here we go for some live Taffin action. And the scene begins with Bronholm sat in the sofa saying, "What goes on in this town is none of your business."
"Well, as long as I'm living here, it is my business."
Thank you very much, Black Squadron, live at Glastonbury 2011.
Black Squadron, we salute you. Thank you for coming, and thank you for listening, and thank you for being amazing.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared because Retro Text the Nation's here. And now my letter might be read out instead of thrown in the bin and forgotten about.
Wow, what a jingle.
It's amazing.
It's so moving. I think we should have half an hour of silence just to let that jingle resonate.
I mean, it would be good, I suppose, in a way for you, Joe Cornish, if one of the bands here at Glastonbury was to cover that.
It's probably going to happen.
Yeah, you reckon?
Yeah, I'd imagine one of the exciting secret acts.
It does sound like a Coldplay track.
What am I supposed to say to that?
You're supposed to be flattered. They're headlining the Pyramid stage tonight, you know?
Yeah.
It sounds like one of the good Coldplay tracks.
Hey, thanks.
Sounds amazing. I can see Martin sitting there with sweat beading down his forehead and...
I don't think he could give it the requisite passion and
you
emotion.
Reckon?
Yeah, he just doesn't have the voice.
That's true, isn't it? He's no cornballs.
So listen, listeners, Retro Text the Nation is, of course, the part of the show where, if you listen to the programme online or via the podcast, you can contribute to the previous week's Text the Nation subject, which was...
Nature war. This was inspired by a story I had about battling nettles. I had some nettle problems outside my house.
We got quite a lot of nettle-based responses, didn't we? Some people were angered by your destruction of the nettles.
Well, Tom Mosley from Birmingham says, "Dear Adam and Joe, I'm actually going to read this in probably quite an offensive kind of caricature of what I imagine Tom to be."
Uh-oh.
Okay, here we go.
Strap yourself down, Tom.
"Stop giving the nettles a bad time, guys. Thanks to the stinging hairs, nettles are rarely eaten by herbivores."
Is this Neil from The Young Ones?
A little bit, yeah.
You can also be seen playing drums for the Fleet Foxes.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. So I'm imagining Tom Mosley in Birmingham with his long beard there. He's wandering around, more or less nude. He's got pants made of nettles.
He survives entirely on a nettle-based diet.
He absolutely loves nettles.
He lives in a nettle house.
He says they provide long-term shelter for insects such as caterpillars and many butterflies and moths. The insects, in turn, provide food for small birds such as tits. As a herbal remedy, young nettles have many benefits. They can be used to treat hay fever, arthritis and anemia. An infusion of nettles in tea can be used as a blood purifier and a cleansing tonic. The plant has an anti-asthmatic, anti-dandruff, astringent diuretic and hypoglycemic properties and can be used to treat internal bleeding, hemorrhoids, eczema and other skin problems. It's also good for kidney and urinary system ailments. Nettles can also be used to curdle milk instead of rennet. Did you know that? That's useful, isn't it?
I think you're putting on that mocking accent because you're threatened by his knowledge.
I am a little bit. He says, "So guys, wise up. Stop dissing this amazing plant. Us kids deserve to know better. All the best, Tom Mosley, Birmingham."
Well done, Tom. I agree with you. I think you're right. And I think you should be furious with Adam for belittling your info burst.
Well, I don't know. I still have a lot of nettle problems. I'm going to read you a poem in a little bit that someone sent in all about nettles, which I'd never seen before. But you've got a nettle, or not nettle-based, but just a nature story.
Yeah,
there,
nature taking its revenge. This is an email we got from Kit, who's a male man, and he lives in Australia, mate.
Oh, mate!
He says, "Hello, Adam, Shame, and Sloppy Joe.
Adam Shame.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't worry about that. Your man versus nature stroke nature wars text the nation topic reminded me of when I was a little boy on holidays.
Oh, a damn shame.
You got it. We were playing Chasey in the dark at a holiday caravan park.
Love Chasey.
As I raced through the dark, a huge cicada flew straight into my mouth and hit me on the back of my throat.
Steady.
It was vibrating as it flew along and rattled in my mouth. I spat it out in disgust. So awful was the feeling, I lay on the ground spitting for some minutes.
Oh, mate.
It's not over yet. He has a flashback. Months later, I was back in town riding my BMX down a steep hill. The thought of the cicada flying into my mouth suddenly just popped into my head. I started involuntary... Oh, this is a disaster.
Involuntarily, mate.
I should read it in an Australian accent.
Of
that's
course, that's where you went wrong.
I started involuntarily spitting again, as though the cicada were in my mouth, and crashed my bicycle into a lamppost, which was painful and embarrassing. Nature wins again. Bye!
Cicada in the throat. That's
imagine
no good.
That.
Jumping around.
Vibrating. Your
rubbing its
epiglottis.
Legs together underneath your uvula.
It's like something out of Silence of the Lambs.
It's absolutely hideous.
Ingesting moths.
So here's this poem that Amy sent in. She is a woman. And she says, I'm marking GCSE English exams at the moment, and one of the poems in the anthology is called Nettles by Vernon Scannell. Listening to Adam's discussion about the nettles in his garden, it reminded me of the protective father in this poem slashing away at the nettles in revenge for his son's nettle stings. So I'm going to read you a poem right now, listeners.
Who's this poem by?
This is Victor Scannell.
Okay.
And he was born in 1922, a British poet and author, a one-time professional boxer. He also wrote novels about the sport.
What kind of voice are you going to use to read the poem?
Now, that's a good question. I mean, I'm thinking sort of Radio 4 sonorous.
Yes, very close and soothing.
Yeah, to make this deep. Kind of, classy.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear it.
It's the kind of thing Bob Dylan might do on Theme Time Radio Hour, suddenly read a poem.
Could you do it in a Bob voice?
Okay. My son, age 3, fell in the nettle bed. Bed seems like a curious name for those green spears, that regiment of spite behind the shed. It was no place for rest. With sobs and tears, the boy came seeking comfort, and I saw white blisters beaded on his tender skin. We smoothed him till his pain was not so raw. At last he offered us a watery grin. And then I took my billhook, honed the blade, and went outside and slashed in fury with it, till not a nettle in that fierce parade stood upright any more. And then I lit a funeral pyre to burn the fallen dead. But in 2 weeks the busy sun and rain had called up tall recruits behind the shed. My son would often feel sharp wounds again.
That's very deep.
Vernon Scannell. I think I said Victor before.
That's very deep. That was very beautifully read. I mean, there was a little bit of a stumble, but yeah. Bob's old.
He I mean, that wasn't problems. My best Bob Dylan impression. In a way, I wish that I'd gone for the Radio 4 voice. But I think you've got one more just to conclude.
I do have one more. A final battle with nature. This comes from Dan Swindlehurst, who is a man boy. I don't know what that means, really.
He's like Mowgli.
He says, a few years ago, I was on holiday in Indonesia with my now ex-girlfriend. Whilst visiting temples out in the jungle, I was bitten by a spider. As any man would do, I totally ignored it. The next day, I had a high fever and mild hallucinations, but I refused to tell my then-girlfriend, as any time I complained of being ill, she would mock me mercilessly and call my manhood into question. So, feeling like I was dying, we went for a huge trek under the blazing sun to a monkey temple, where I was punched in the face by a monkey.
Monkey punch?
Wallop. Nature well and truly beat me that day. Dan Swindlehurst.
And then he says, he's got a picture of the monkey as well there. Check that out, man.
Look at that. He looks quite happy having been punched by the monkey.
He's sort of happy. He says, I was so ill when I came back from Indonesia. I had to quit my job and then I lost my girlfriend. Happy times. Love you. Bye. So he's never going back. He got a monkey punch. He got ill. He lost his girlfriend. She didn't sound like a very good girlfriend, though.
That's the way monkeys greet each other.
By punching.
Yeah. Maybe it's a greeting you and I should take up. Just a quick little lamp in the face.
A little bit of a monkey punch. But I wouldn't be able to reach your face because I'm too small.
That would be a good film, Monkey Punch.
It'd be a Julie punch.
I'm having a lovely time at the festival. Oh, I can't remember where I put my tent. I've been walking round and round, but my tent cannot be found. And I've lost my keys and wallet and my friends. This is fun.
Hey, we're at the press tent. It's right in the middle of the festival. And we've just been issued with a list of questions that absolutely every journalist or media person has to use when conducting interviews or chatting to anyone about the festival at all.
As everybody knows, the Glastonbury Festival started out as a free-for-all, and now it's a rigorously controlled environment. Every element prescribed by higher forces, including questions and answers asked both by journalists to celebrities and asked between friends.
So let's see how we deal with these. We're just going to ask each other a few of these. Joe, tent or teepee?
Tent or teepee? I love that question.
Yeah.
I would go for a teepee tent.
Uh-huh.
It's a combination of a tent and a teepee. It's the worst of both things.
Mm.
It's drafty and flimsy, difficult to erect.
I would go for a peepee tent, which is just a tiny tent that you have around your Netherlands. And it's somewhere where you can just whistle while you work. Which is a fun song that was in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, if you remember. It's good because you might be in the middle of a big crowd and you don't want to go and find the nearest lavatory. You can use your peepee tent.
I'm going to ask you one of these standard questions now, Adam. What was your first Glastonbury memory?
That's a great question, man.
Thanks.
I guess my first memory would have been shortly after I was born. I don't know if you know, but I was birthed on the Glastonbury tour by friendly wizards and a couple of tall Venusians who were passing through. My mother was the Earth. Don't know if you know her. She's very nice, but she's a bit beaten up now. My father was the Sun. So I suppose my first memory really was Michael Eavis coming over to me and asking me if I wanted to work on the farm. To which I said, yes, I'd love to, and I've been here ever since. How about you?
I think you have false memory syndrome.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to skip that question.
Are you? You can't skip the questions.
Well, I have to, because you're going to ask me this next question.
All right, mate. Here you go. Here's one for you. Oh, this is a great one. I love this question.
Okay.
Who are you most looking forward to seeing? Oh. Sorry, I just fell asleep. I'm awake now. I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine.
That's a good question. Well, there's various approaches to that question.
Yeah.
I mean, approach A is I just name one of the headline acts.
Sure.
That's the way to get
go
in.
Go on, do it. Do it now. Do it now. Do it now.
Beyonce.
Oh, brilliant. It's a good answer.
Or if I want to give myself a little more credibility,
yeah,
I might name somebody from one of the lesser stages that no one's heard of.
Oh.
Like the Barboobity Bye Eyes,
yeah,
who will be playing their points of view set on the Crapola stage.
Over and over again. Play Barboobity Bye.
And approach C would be to say something absurd,
uh-huh,
like the Ordinary Boys.
Right, right, right. Here's who I'm most looking forward to seeing. One of the Wombles. Maybe either one of the Wombats or one of the Wombles. Probably I would love to see a Womble.
Which Womble would you be most excited by?
Who do you think?
Shalay.
Obviously Shalay.
She's the sexy one of
yeah,
being sexy rat in a pinny. What man couldn't resist a big lady rat? She's got 20 breasts.
The rat in the pinny.
Yeah, that's why she
really
wears the pinny, to conceal them. They're in a line down the centre of her.
Can you imagine? That would be a good photo, though, wouldn't it? Backstage before the Wombles go on, with all the Wombles gathered
suckling
around.
Suckling on Madame
Cholet. Suckling with Madame Cholet.
It's going to happen.
Wow. I would love to get into that little huddle. The rumours are flying around the site about all kinds of special guests. What I'm most looking forward to is maybe one of the Wombles tearing off their big foamy heads and there being someone exciting and celebrity-based underneath there. I mean, I heard Lauren talking about the idea that maybe Florence from Florence and the Machine was going to be under one of the rat hoods.
I heard another rumour. I heard that Uncle Bulgaria was going to pull off his own head,
yeah,
which will be traumatic for the audience to begin with, to reveal Florence.
Yeah.
And then 5 to 10 minutes later, after Florence has sung the things that she sings,
yep,
she would then pull her head off.
Whoa.
To reveal
Rolf.
Nothing inside. She's actually pulled her head off.
Oh, yeah. So it's just blood.
It's just horrific. It's
that's
just
horrific.
Horrific.
That's absolutely horrific.
But it's very memorable.
Well, a more fun thing, obviously, would be is if she pulled her head off and Rolf Harris was under there.
Yes, that would be more memorable.
It's Rolf Harris! Oh, mate! And then he'd get out his wobble board and everyone would be happy and the sun would come out. Maybe that's why it's a bit rainy, because Rolf isn't here this year.
There we are. Those are the standard Glastonbury questions. And if you're at the festival, be sure you've got your answers ready, because they are the only questions that are allowed to be asked.
Correct.
Travelling tales, tales of travelling on the train, or an automobile, or an aeroplane. I want to know what your travelling tales.
All aboard this guy. Look!
I mean, we all do it. We've all got to get from A to B.
Yeah.
And we do it in the company of strange human beings.
It's a universal thing.
And sometimes peculiar situations arise, and that's what this segment is all about. I've got one here. Can I start, please?
Go on, then.
Dad? This is from Dominic, who's in his early 30s. He's a male, and he lives in Sutton Coalfield. This says, Dear Adam, Joe, and producer. It's a very good stripped-down intro. This relates to personal space on foot, not on bottom. So this is unusual. He's talking about pedestrian travelling.
Yep, heads.
You may have noticed that some people have a habit of swinging their arms wildly when they walk, instead of holding them rigidly at their sides like normal polite citizens. I get the popular Birmingham Cross City train service from Sutton Coldfield to University Station for my job on or near the Birmingham University campus. At University Station, passengers disembarking get funneled up a narrow set of steps in order to exit the station. And it is on these steps that I encounter my problem. On these steps, the wild swinging arms are often at the crotch level of the person walking behind. My problem is this. Do I hang back in order to leave space in between me and the passenger in front, thereby risking the wrath of other passengers behind me who are held up and made late for work? Or do I risk the very real possibility of a stray arm and hand brushing against my crotch?
He says risk it.
I do carry my work bag, which contains my sandwich and a book. But don't use this to shield my front bits, as I'd rather shield my back bits from the prying eyes of others. Many thanks, Dominic. Dominic's confused. Maybe he's got a peculiar bottom.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what's going on, Dominic? I mean, you're missing a lot of potential great times there, as far as I can tell.
I really sympathise with this as a man who is at 6'2½", I think I am, height-wise. Yeah. And I find my crotchal area at precisely that swinging arm height.
Really?
And I love it.
Yeah, of course you do.
I maneuver into exactly the right position.
Yeah.
I love... Yeah, I won't go into too much detail, but boy, oh boy, oh boy. Sometimes I just go round and round the circle line, up and downstairs.
Exactly. I mean, you don't really need to travel by tube. You just pick the most busy time
and
get on there.
And now this hole is opening in my jeans. It's going to be a whole new level of excitement. So, Dominic, I would suggest you rip a hole in the crotch of your jeans. You neglect to wear underwear and go for it.
Have some fun. Here's something not entirely unrelated from Kaz in Edinburgh. She says, I was recently travelling by train from Aberdeen. At a table across from the aisle from me, there was a female lady that kept giving me withering looks as I giggled to myself whilst listening to one of your podcasts on my iPod. However, I was then the one giving her odd looks, as she took a tin of fragrant deodorant spray from her bag and sprayed it up her miniskirt. As this odd sweet smell filled the carriage...
Have you read this through before reading it now? Yeah.
It's one of the last shows we're at Glastonbury. All I could think of, he says, as this odd sweet smell filled the carriage, all I could think of was that we were smelling cheap spray infused with lady parts from Kaz in Edinburgh. I mean, that is... It's weird, isn't it? That's not a fun smell, I don't think. Maybe it is a fun smell. It's strange when women do their toilet on the train. And when I say toilet, I mean makeup routines. You know what I'm saying? I don't mean actually going to the lavatory.
You are digging a big, dirty hole for yourself.
What? Come on, that's a fun dirty hole. You're the one riding around on the circle line with the big hole in your trousers, pressing up against people.
Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. Wow, what an extraordinary series of pictures you've painted in everyone's mind. Is that it for Travelling Tales?
I've got one more here. This is a nice view from an American. An American.
How very exotic.
I'm not going to do an American accent for him. You'll have to imagine that for yourself, listeners. But he says his name is Dylan Savage.
Dylan Savage.
Dylan Savage. He's an annihilator. He says, Dear Adenoid and Buccinator, I'm a postal worker man from Memphis, Tennessee, and I recently returned from a vacation in the UK and Ireland. On the train to Edinburgh from York, after a delay, we were about a minute down the track before someone pulled the emergency lever, or lever, as they think the Americans call it, in the carriage behind me. The sardonic, though at the moment irate, Scottish conductor rushed down the aisle and shouted, You pulled the Franklin lever? For what? I later learned that he had broken up a fight and thrown the man off the train, and that's why someone had pulled a lever, and he didn't think it was sufficiently important.
Well, a man had been thrown from a travelling train?
Yeah, the Scottish conductor. Ah, you're off! I don't care if I'm not in the station! No, you know, they were at the station and there was a fight.
Okay,
they stopped.
My
girlfriend and I were then sitting at a table seat across the aisle from some rough people from Newcastle who were a little bit drunk and kept shouting out lyrics along with their iPods. We will give them the axe! he says, was one of the lyrics that they shouted out from there. I don't know what they could have been listening to there. And they were also yelling at people who made the mistake of walking by. This was one of my first experiences in what became a wonderful and surreal trip in the UK. I later saw a woman in a bus station in Galway feed her toddler by pouring Coke into a baby bottle and then shaking it up to shoot the carbonation out of the rubber nipple. I got the impression that she did this quite often. P.S. I spent the whole time annoying my girlfriend by saying things to her in an Australian accent. Please keep doing it. I'm a big fan of Aussie accents. Thanks, mate. Cheers, Dylan Savage.
Prepare the factual generator.
I can't think it's working now.
Now give me Glastonbury facts.
Oh, now it's broken again.
So it is a little bit damaged, the factual generator.
Okay.
But let's see how we get on. Did you know, and these are facts about some of the members of Coldplay, particularly Chris and Gwyneth. I don't know if you know, but Gwyneth writes all the songs. First interesting fact there, that's by the by. Chris and Gwyneth are both extremely health-conscious individuals, and they follow a strict diet that was specially created for them by Gennaro Contaldo. He's one of the two greedy Italians. Breakfast for the family consists of dried plankton on a bed of Wotsits, followed by a bowl of flaked bark with rainwater and a glass of bezique to wash it all down. For lunch, the couple enjoy the dreams of X Factor contestants. And the reason they love those is because they're very low in fat. And then for supper, it's a lolly biff.
What was the first one again?
Breakfast. Well, it's what I had this morning. What we had at the
plankton
hotel.
Plankton on Wotsits.
Dried plankton on a bed of Wotsits.
Well, are the Wotsits healthy?
Yeah, they crush them.
They crush them.
So they're easier to digest.
They're very absorbent, so they soak up all the bad bacteria.
Also, sometimes, depending on your digestive system, they repeat on you, so you can have them for later.
Gets rid of the bad air.
Exactly. Did you know that bass player of Coldplay, Guy Berryman, is made almost entirely... What do you mean?
No, I'm excited. I'm excited about the next thing.
Of berries.
Berries.
He's either made of berries or botanical berries. His head is a watermelon. His eyes are gooseberries. His cheeks are strawberries. His skin is mashed pumpkin, which is also a botanical berry, did you know? And his julies are made from tomatoes and a banana.
He must have to work very hard in the morning to put on the makeup. It's a bit like Michael Jackson, who had a hole in his nose. He had to put a plaster on and pour foundation over it. But that guy has to start out with a face that's an arrangement of tropical fruits.
Listen, they have to pack the guy in ice whenever they travel
anywhere.
Do they? Sure, because they don't want him to go all mouldery.
Wow.
Chris and Gwyneth, did you know? So I'm still drunk on power. Have recently been looking for a nanny to take care of their children, Apple Cheeks, Mentos, and Fizzwiz. The nanny would be paid over £65 a week. I mean, that's grotesque, isn't it? Imagine making that kind of money for a nanny. They have specified, though, that the applicants must have presented T4, must have read and loved the Da Vinci Code, and must have the ability to discreetly turn paparazzi into a delicious low-fat dip. Also, they must have fought in some kind of fashion war.
Yes.
On the winning side. Final Glastonbury fact about Coldplay. Did you know Chris Martin? I'm sure you did know this. He is a vocal activist and a supporter of a number of worthy causes, including the campaign to stop raisins from sinking in cereal boxes, to keep them buoyant
content
throughout
settling.
The whole... Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't want to get to the bottom of the raisin-based cereal
That's disgusting.
Find a glut of raisins there. That's grotesque. He's also very much involved with the campaign to keep Grazia Brilliant, or KGB, as an acronym. So he has
that's just pushing for more exclamation marks.
Yeah, loads of exclamation marks. More features about either Gwyneth or Jennifer Aniston.
And a more ornate font and a heavier paper stock, a glossier paper stock.
Yeah, KGB, keep Grazia Brilliant. He's got it written on his thighs, I think. And also he's involved very much with the campaign to minimize his own airborne toxic events, M-A-T-E, or mate.
Mate.
Because in the past, Martin's events have caused a great deal of unrest and happiness.
Yes.
And unhappiness.
They had to ground transatlantic flights, didn't they?
That's right. There was a toxic cloud last year, if you remember, that caused a lot of problems for holidaymakers.
Queues at airports.
Yeah.
The stench.
So anyway, he's obviously gutted about that, and he's battling to stop it ever happening again. That's Glastonbury Facts for today. Pip-a-poo!
I love that jingle. That's such a good jingle. When did you record that jingle?
Oh, man. We went into Maida Vale to record it last week.
Great.
With
great,
an orchestra.
Great, great.
Cost a lot of money. Great. A lot of money.
Oh, mate, I'm going to fly to England to find Adam and Joe. They are my favourite pair of Brits. I love their super podcast and the accents that they die. My plan is to get drunk with them and punch them in the tits.
Hello, listeners. We are here backstage at The Other Stage, and we are very excited to be joined by Mr. Robin Pecknold, the lead singer of the Fleet Foxes. Hello, Robin.
How's it going, man?
It's going well. We're very excited to meet you. We play your music a lot on our show. We're huge fans. And we should start with a serious topic.
Okay.
Because we feel responsible for a certain amount of verbal vandalism that has happened at your shows for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and I'm of course talking to you about the Stephen phenomenon. Yeah. Can I call it a phenomenon? Is that self-aggrandizing?
It's an absolutely massive phenomenon that swept the world. 3 years ago, it started as a kind of call and response on our program. You could shout Stephen to anyone in the street, and if they said, just coming, then you would know that they were fans of this program, of the Adam and Joe program on Six Music.
Mm-hmm.
But then it started getting shouted out at gigs, and I think the first time I was aware of that happening was Fleet Foxes fans texting us and saying,
yeah,
hey, there was a bit of Stevenage at the gig the other day, maybe at the Roundhouse 3 years ago.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, totally.
So were you aware of that happening, and were you? Is that a little confusing, first of all, when people start shouting things that you don't quite understand in the audience? Maybe you think that they're heckling you in some way.
Well, the first time it happened, it just sounded like somebody was looking for Steven.
Yeah.
And then subsequently, yeah, it was obviously like some form of meme that we weren't like totally aware of.
You weren't privy to.
Yeah. couple times. But it also sounds a little bit like Freebird, so.
Freebird!
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you ever play that?
No.
Okay.
No.
We should apologize, though, Robin. We're sorry. We're sorry on behalf of our listeners. We're sorry. I mean, we're 50% sorry. Well, let's say 51 or 2% sorry and 48 or 9% excited,
yeah,
that we've somehow... We're like sort of...
infiltrated.
Yeah, petulant children throwing rocks at an adult, you know? We just wanted to have some effect. We're excited that we've had some sort of impact on a band we love.
It's better than indiscriminate shouting, you know, of any variety. And it happens to me on the street now, too. Just like, Steven!
No.
No.
Thank God for that. No, but I do feel a sense of responsibility, and part of me feels ashamed for the behavior of our listeners. Some of me feels ashamed for our show in general, but...
Well, it's good because, like, because if there's, like... Because we'll tune a little bit between songs sometimes, like, so the wheels aren't totally greased at our shows all the time. So I think, like, that stage silence makes people nervous, and then they want to say something. So it's better to have it fall back on the Steven thing than have it be like, you guys suck, or like,
yeah,
you know.
We're launching the You Guys Suck meme next year, so you can look forward to that.
Yeah.
I am absolutely unequivocally delighted that we've invaded your mind space. I do think, though, that Stevenage is probably quite respectful. I bet they don't ruin the quiet parts of your songs with it, though, do they?
No, that would be insane.
Yeah, good. Well, yeah, I'm absolutely happy about it, and thanks for being so nice about it.
Would you like, Robin, would you like it to stop?
No.
Really, because we can stop it.
Oh, you can?
We can,
you have,
yeah,
control.
We think we can. Our listeners are very good people.
Do you think it's universally your listeners, or has it passed into a...
I think it's universally our listeners.
Yeah. Okay.
It's localized.
Well, that's good to know, you know, because then it's like...
It's not going to get out of hand.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if it gets out of hand, just let us know and we'll stop it.
I'll
can have listeners punished. You know, the BBC is a national organization. We can have listeners imprisoned.
Yeah.
Or so just let us know if that would help.
Yeah.
Also, we can send out a very high frequency on the radio show, which shuts that part of their brain down completely. They don't realize that yet, but we have that power, cool. So it's all doable.
Sweet.
I'm pushing through the crowd. Out my way, please. Cheers. I gotta get to the front. Don't you spill my beers.
So, Robin, let's talk a little bit about where we are right now. We're in what appears to be a kind of exhibition conference centre that they've erected behind the other stage here at Glastonbury. Yeah. Is this typical of the kind of backstage area that you find at festivals?
Yes. It's very just sort of a something that's been constructed in the last 48 hours.
It's very much like one of the offices from the film Brazil.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is that what the rock world is like now, do you think? Or do you ever find yourself backstage in places that are bedecked with Indian, you know, wall hangings and...
Well, at Primavera Festival, it was the same kind of thing, but it was like these beautiful Spanish hardwood floors, you know, like reclaimed wood or something.
Yeah.
So that was different. But it's never like a pleasure dome.
Right. You know. And also, you know, it seems particularly incongruous for you, a member of the Fleet Foxes, who for many people live in their imagination as sort of mountain men.
Sure.
Snowed in 365 days of the year, their beards intertwined.
Yeah.
As they harmonize with each other around the log fire, cooking up, you know, catfish on a skillet.
But now you're just reading from our bio.
And is that a world that is in any way reflective of how you grew up at all, or is it a complete world of mythology that you spun?
I feel like obviously, like, there's like an element of our appearance implies something, you know. But aside from like some lyrical content, obviously that's like, you know, naturalistic, a lot of it to me is just like personal stories. I mean, obviously we didn't grow up together, and I mean Sky and I grew up together, but you know, we weren't like raised by wolves or anything. But I don't necessarily think the music is, I think there's like enough other content, like personal content there, that especially on this one, like I feel like all of it is just like my own thoughts on stuff, and it's not like, you know, necessarily trying to present something, you know, other than that.
Very little of it deals with actually catching beavers and muskrats.
Yeah, only 25% is
for the muskrat fans. And do you think there will ever come a time where you experiment with a radically different lyrical palette? I've got some very exciting ideas for how you could reach a whole new audience with the same kind of lovely tunes and your beautiful harmonizing.
Yeah, Stephen.
A little bit of you can have some Stephenage in there. But I've got some great ideas.
Adam's just unfolding his piece of paper. And Robin, I should preface this by saying Adam's a sensitive man.
Okay.
And he's been
so I need to be receptive.
He's been working on this for a while. So please treat him gently. Any flippancy is not, you know, it's very gentle. He's very gentle. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm just filling. Here we go.
Good filling, Phil.
We wondered what would happen if you put lots of modern references into the Fleet Foxes material, you know, so the under 15s
totally
connected, you know what I mean? Because this is what it's all about now. Chris Brown,
text me back something
Lady
freaky.
Gaga, yes. Lyrics that can be exactly put in texts, maybe more acronyms.
Okay,
here we go. I've got an amazing singing voice, by the way. What might happen is you might hear me singing this and get quite intimidated, and your confidence will be shaken
a little bit.
Because you'll realize there's someone out there who can do this a little bit better than I can, and he's also got a beard, and maybe I'm a bit of a fraud. So don't worry if you feel that, all right, man? So this is a slightly more modern version of He Doesn't Know Why. Will you be playing that song tonight?
No. Maybe. With these new lyrics.
You may want to
after
you hear this.
Okay.
I was writing tweets on my iPad too when I saw I got a new text message from you. Have you heard the new Lady Gaga tune? Gonna Spotify it later. OMG, I can't believe this amazing app. It takes everything you say and turns it into rap. I really love my new DS, but the 3D's crap. I play it on my skateboard. And then you do the beautiful modern harmonic woobling after that. Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that working?
Does anyone write songs like that?
Of course
they do. Have you ever heard a song like that?
Of all the rapping young rappers do.
All the young rappers do?
The young rapping rappers do.
I don't think I've ever heard a song.
Of course.
Even the newest Lady Gaga song. Or the newest Justin Bieber, I don't think.
Justin Bieber, is maybe that, not, but he's disconnected from the real world.
Is that focused on consumer electronics?
Yeah. But it's a gap in the market.
True.
We should listen. If you do decide to do that song, Robin, we'd like to give you these lyrics.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, in no way are we expecting you to sing them.
No. No.
Because he's intimidated, you see, because I sung it too well. Well, I think we're going to let you go now.
Okay.
Now that we've tortured you enough. Do we have anything else we need to ask?
No, nothing else to say. Just that we love you and your music, and thank you for talking to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, on behalf of everyone who listens to our show, thanks for being so lovely about the Stevenage.
Oh, it's just part of... It's part of the fabric of our lives.
Well, we apologize for that stinky bit of fabric. Yes. But thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, totally.
Have a good show tonight, man.
Thank you. Yeah.
Take care.
Hello, Six Music listeners. It is I, the lead singer of U2. Bonus. Myself and the rest of the U2 guys, Larry, Edge Baston, and Graham, wish to offer you and Adam and Joe a special festival blessing, which we will do by laying our hands on your heads. Ugh! What have you got on your heads? That's disgusting. Get away from me. I need handy wipes.
The thing about the exhortations of Bonio and many other singers when they reach a certain age is that whereas once they sounded like cries of youth and excitement and energy, now it sounds like they're sort of running out of breath, reaching for the coffee in the cupboard.
He was doing a good job. They all look quite youthful.
He
was moving around the place.
Was he wearing... I didn't even see them. Was he wearing crazy glasses or anything?
I can't remember. He was wearing his little exciting leather motorbike man outfit. And he was bopping around. At one stage, he appeared to be making... sort of lovemaking gestures towards the audience.
Was he?
At another stage, he fought Edge's guitar like he was a bull. He put his fingers up either side of his head and sort of charged the guitar.
Yeah.
But he looked pretty nimble. The only one giveaway to the fact that he was getting old was someone had let the air out of his buttocks. They were a little bit sort of Michael... What's that Michael Douglas film where you get a shocking sort of shot of his bum?
Oh,
Like a couple of hot water bottles.
Yes, the Sharon Stone one.
Yeah.
That's totally gone out of my... Basic Instinct,
yeah,
yes.
It was a tiny bit like that. But other than that, that was just because he was wearing very tight leather.
Yeah.
And there weren't many, you know...
I think it'd be good if he had one of those little tiny mini motorcycles that...
a mini moto.
Yeah. And just rode around that with his...
That would be good.
With his leather chap sticking out of the side there.
Yeah, that
charging.
Would be good.
It would be good. You're looking confused, but it would be good.
No, his what? Sticking out the what?
His leather chap sticking out the side.
Right,
know.
Yeah.
No, his
I don't know
chap.
What you're talking about.
His chaps. And he would charge at the edge like that. I mean, it's not dignified behaviour, I was going to say, but then I thought coming from us, that would be the pot calling the kettle back. And that takes us in to Eggcorns.
Somebody's been eardropping on me, and now I'm suffering their strings and arrows, can't you see? I was standing on the curve like a jester of goodwill, but now I'm curled up in the feeble position still, cause of my Eggcorns. When it comes to Eggcorn business, Eggcorns, I'm like Farmer Heck in Christmas, Eggcorns. The pot will call the kettle back, Eggcorns, cause it's an Eggcorn attack.
And now, here at the Adam and Joe Show on Six Music, we love language, we love words, don't we, Adam?
Yeah, mainly juvenile smutty words.
Yeah, and also wrong ones, things that people get wrong. We like to call them Eggcorns, and here are some Eggcorns.
I mean, we didn't christen them Eggcorns.
Yeah, but I'm making it sound like we did.
Okay, good one.
Have you got one?
Yeah, here's one from Ian Roth. He's an Englishman living in Australia, mate.
Mate, we got a lot of Aussie listeners.
I tell you, we should go over... If someone is listening out there in Oz, and you are a rich person... Fly us out, bruv.
Yeah,
we'll go out there and do a show for you, no problem.
We would blend in perfectly.
We would totally blend in, mate.
Mate, it's almost as if we pick the Australian ones just to give an excuse to do the amazing accents.
I know, I do. So Ian Roth, but he's an Englishman, though, living in Australia. He says, hi, Ads and J-Pod. Great egg corn from my female colleague at work today during a rant about one of her Facebook friends who has slightly non-PC views of the world. She said in a rather exasperated manner, God, her stupid status updates really ruffle my goat. Love you, bye.
Get my goat, ruffle my feathers.
Right, exactly.
Ruffle my goat. Maybe he has a little goat on a string who is very sensitive to linguistic errors.
And a goat would hate to be ruffled, I think.
Goats hate it. They hate like cats who hate being stroked in the wrong direction.
Ooh, yeah. Imagine. And their goat would be twice as bad.
Even though a good thing to do with a cat is stroke it in the wrong direction quite a lot, get it quite angry, and then do one big one the right way. And then it goes...
and calm it right down.
Oh, thanks.
They love it. Here's one from Gregory, which is spelt G-R-E-G-G-R-Y. Gregory.
Gregory.
Gregory P. Savage. He says, dearest Signorina Buxton and Mademoiselle Jojo.
Correct.
I used to work for a local authority's debt recovery department, and one of my colleagues, an elder lady who had the look of a miniature Patricia Routledge and the voice of the Queen, not yours, Adam.
Oh, no, no.
Not yours, Adam. Once came out with a cracking egg corn. She was on the phone talking to a debtor who'd been making sporadic payments towards his arrears. The problem is, Mr. Smith, she said in her cut-glass imperious voice, you've been making your payments very, very erotically. My colleagues and I promptly fell off our chairs and laughed solidly for 11 and a half minutes. Hope you use this. Love you. Bye. We did. How would you make an erotic payment? Don't answer that question. Move on to the next one.
Oh, there's so much you could say about slots and cards and fun things like that. Asher, he's a mailman, 32, from London, says, hi, Adman and Josephus. Just got an email from a teacher who states that they're just, quote, creating a school blog where Vox Pox can be added. Which puts me in mind of little pustules spouting opinions. So, on reflection, maybe that works as intended. Love you, bye, Asher.
Like How to Get Ahead in Advertising.
Little Vox
Pox. He's got some pox that have voxes,
yeah.
Doesn't he, in that film? Here's one from Peter Brooks in Tunbridge Wells. Dear Adam Buxton and Joe Cornish, I'm traditional and I like it.
I like it.
On the subject of egg corns, a friend was describing his battle with a British-based telecoms company and their flimsy, flopsy service. When describing how they had legally broken their own terms and conditions, he remarked, they stabbed themselves in the back. Cue much humour between ourselves before we corrected him. That's not too bad, is it? Shoot yourself in the foot, stab someone else in the back.
Yeah.
Stabbing yourself in the back.
That's quite a good concept, to stab yourself in the back.
Yeah.
But that would imply that you were betraying yourself.
Yeah. That's good. That's deep, that one, Peter. I mean, it's not necessarily funny. It's just a thinking point.
Well, that sums up this show in in a nutshell.
Something to think about.
Not necessarily funny. Something to think about. Here's one more from me. And this one is not even necessarily an egg corn, but it made me chuckle. Hi, Adam S. and Corn King. This is not a true egg corn, just an odd thing my boss used to say, says Joe, a mailman. And Joe says, when working in a gift-type shop in Brighton, my boss would always use the word syndrome at the end of a sentence. For example, sorry I'm late, the washing machine broke and flooded the kitchen floor. Syndrome! Or, I can't believe how rude that last customer was. Syndrome! I started counting how many times she would use the phrase in a day. I once counted 25 occurrences. It got annoying, and I had to get a new job. To this day, I cannot work out why she said it and where she got it from. It makes no sense to me. Syndrome!
So it's a she, but she talks like that.
Yeah, I'm imagining, like, quite a big, chunky, feisty woman. She's going around just adding syndrome to the end of each sentence.
That could catch on. Let's hope it doesn't.
Come on, syndrome!
And that's the end of the podcast. Now here's a goodbye link.
That's it from us. I just heard the little boy that I punched in the face earlier on is more or less fine, so don't worry about that. Thank you, good night.
So that was our podcast for today. I mean, this is weird, isn't it? Because normally we're in a hermetically sealed box in the middle of the BBC, Big British Castle, of course, and now we are in the middle of a mob that feels as if it might turn at any second.
Yeah, it's a very tense atmosphere, very threatening faces. Of course it's not. They're the loveliest, most attractive faces in the country.
Yeah.
And, you know, thanks so much, everybody, for coming out.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. It's very nice to meet you all. I hope we get to hang out a little bit later on and, you know, maybe come back to your tents and make some sweet, sweet love. How does that sound?
Nervous laughter there, Adam. Nervous laughter. But thanks for listening. There will be one more Glastonbury podcast tomorrow. Until then.
I love you more!
Hey! Hey!
see Six Music Podcasts.
If you liked Adam and Joe, why not try Jarvis Cocker's Six Music Show, Sundays from 4.
Six Music. Six Music.
I went on a Cliff bender the other day. Suddenly, Cliff popped in my mind, and I just went Cliff crazy.
Did you?
And I started listening to Wired for Sound. Do you remember that
one? That one I like.
That's the one that got me into Cliff. Yeah. And you know how sometimes you have fond memories of things that you grew up with and that you listened to as a child, and you go back to them and you think, ooh, that doesn't sound good at all. But Wired for Sound sounded decent.
Yes.
Sounded very decent.
I bet it did.
And, you know, that is an absolute peach, isn't it, in the country there?
Yeah, he's a good singer. He's a very sexy man.
He's good at tennis.
Very good at tennis. Very lovely thighs.
He's got beautiful brown legs, doesn't he?
He's very tan, and they're dusted with a light dusting of hair.
Hair! Beautiful blonde hair. That's true, isn't it?
He's very young looking.
I would
How
lick
does he stay so young?
Cliff's legs.
Yeah. Would you?
Yeah. I'd have no qualms.
He likes that done. He likes a small, hairy man to stand at the side of the court.
Sure he does. He's
and
got
when
loads.
The ball boys run in and pick up the balls...
Yeah.
He likes the hairy men to come in and just lick his
legs. They don't go crazy. They don't want to wear the legs down.
Of course not.
Otherwise, he'd just be stumbling about on pins.
Yeah.
No one wants that.
He's the sexiest, oldest man in the world.
That's true, isn't it?
He's the sexiest, oldest man.
And you know how some people's skin gets very leathery when they get old? Chris,
not Cliff.
It's like chamois leather.
Chris Richard.
Chris Richard. he's got chamois leather legs.
He does. When he waxes his MG... He just does it nude. And he just writhes all over it, all over the bonnet. Mm.
That's
true. I love Chris Richards.
Chris Richards. So Chris is the absolute best with his chamois legs.